Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here tonight with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David. How are you tonight?
Bruce, it's mid-March, and the Oilers are playing meaningful hockey games, so I am very good. And they are now 5 points back of the wild card spot holding Minnesota Wild with a game in hand. Big game against New Jersey, obviously, coming up. But every game, of course, it seems like every game all year has been a must-win for the Oilers because they've been behind the eight ball since word go. But, Bruce, that was an absolute must-win, and they almost gave it away. They almost managed to give that one away, a game where they were the better team on the night. They outchanced the Rangers 14-9 when it came to grade-A chances, but they almost managed to find a way to lose, but their superstars – would not have it. Their superstars would not have it, and they came through with a huge win over the New York Rangers in overtime. This is our two good things, two bad things, and two numbers podcast, Bruce. What is your good thing?
My good thing is the 2 points. We'll take those 2 points. Thank you. And we don't care that we gave up 1 point to an Eastern Conference team. They don't give up points for style in this league, and if they gave us style points for that game, I don't think we'd get a whole lot.
Well, that was a pretty stylish last goal, though.
Yeah, it was. It was. It was a scrambly game. I attended this game, and I sat high in the second level, which is a kind of a new experience for me in this building. It's been a while since I sat that high, and it gives you a very different vantage point. You can see everything. But some of what I saw was not very pretty, I have to say. That was some mighty scrambly hockey, and extended segments of the game. The Oilers were very lucky, as you suggest, not to lose it in the third period. There was a couple of real good looks where the pucks bounced over Ranger sticks. But that said, that happened to the Oilers a bunch of times. I have to wonder, I mean, it's hard to tell from row 40 or wherever I was, if the ice is bad, but the, you know, sort of the superficial circumstantial evidence suggested there was an awful lot of bouncing pucks and
stuff. Maybe there was a lot of just bouncing passes, though. Like there was, yeah. Like, you know, they were playing at a fairly frenetic level. The only kind of calm Oilers, like I thought Andre Sekera was a beacon of cool, calm, and collected out there. Man, did he have a fantastic hockey game. And Larson was pretty cool, calm, and collected. But the Oilers, as a group, I mean, the top line got it done. But as a group, they were pretty ragged in large parts of that game. So, Bruce, 2 points. Absolutely critical. You know, Vancouver, since they lost that crucial game to the Oilers, they're 4 points back now and completely out of it. Whoever lost, that was an elimination game.
That's the boat.
We said it at the time, and it's worked out to be that case, to be the case. So the Oilers face any number of elimination games, of course, in the next little while, being 5 points back. But, you know, what they have to make up over the Wild is – 2 wins and a tie over these final dozen games.
And they still have a game in hand because the Wild got shut out tonight.
Yeah, so a win and a tie if they can win against New Jersey. So this is absolutely, you know, of course, there's all these other teams that I'm not mentioning that are ahead of the Oilers in the standings still.
Mm-hmm. Well, three of them, the Coyotes, the Wild, and the Avalanche all lost in regulation tonight, scoring one goal among the three of them. And only Chicago won, and one of the Chicago or Arizona had to win, so we wanted that to be a regulation game, which it was, 7-1 for Chicago. So it was almost the best of all worlds for the Oilers, but they had to complete their end of the bargain, and that's where the nerves really got frayed.
It became a very embittering experience on a certain level because you could see the out-of-town scoreboard shaping up to be such a great thing for the Oilers, and they were up 2-0. And then this is going to get to my bad thing eventually. But, okay, my good thing, Bruce, was, I mean, obviously McDavid and Draisaitl were fantastic on the scoring plays, and Draisaitl is really turning into such a fantastic superstar NHL hockey player right now. Right before our eyes, he's just driving the Oilers forward. And but my good thing, Bruce, was the line of Colby Cave, Tobias Reeder, and Alex Chiasson. And those guys, they were in on, I think, four or five or four grade A scoring chances. Cave had a great sequence, a couple great sequences. He was unlucky to score. And then Chiasson almost drained a puck late in the game off a great feed by Reeder. Reeder had an unbelievable scoring chance. That poor guy. That poor guy.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like he hustles. He drew a penalty, Bruce. Mm. He had a good game. He made a bad bobble play on the goal against. It was kind of a bang-bang mistake, and it's in the net. Yep. But he had such a fine game, and then he has this chance. Just think if he had scored, like, his first goal then to win that game. Like, that would have been huge for that guy. But he just – he's got nothing when it comes to finish. He just pounds it at the goalie, right at the middle of the goalie, every chance, every great chance he gets. He's probably had about 25 grade-A scoring chance shots this year. He should have, by all rights, based on that, at 5 or 6 goals, but which isn't a lot. But
well, it's a lot more than what he's got, right?
That's one way of looking at it.
As I joked to my seatmate tonight, if you'd have told us at the beginning of the season that our two German players would have over 40 goals at this point, we'd be happy about that.
To combine, you mean?
Combined, yeah. 41,
yeah, we might be thinking that. Yeah, Dreisaitl probably got 25 and Reeder's probably got 15.
Yeah, whatever, right.
I did like that line, though, Bruce. What did you think of them? I mean, you were at the game. Did you notice them? I thought they were pretty good.
I noticed them a lot. And in my end, they were attacking in my end in the second period when Cave got all those good chances. And they were defending my end in the third period when they did cough up that tying goal. And then they had just a horrendous shift that seemed to last about a century, where they could not get the puck out of their own zone. And they finally iced it. And then they iced it again. And I bet you it's at least a couple of those guys were out there for a solid 2 minutes. And it was all chasing. And they survived that. But when they had the puck in New York's end, they were fine.
I think the Oilers have, in Colby Cave, they have their fourth line center for next year.
Maybe so, yeah. They have picked up a few pieces here, I think, that are making their case. And goodness knows the club needs some, you know, just need stars. You need to have NHL players dotting throughout your lineup. And I think maybe they found a couple.
So. Yeah, and one of the people who have been refound, of course, is Sucker. He played 23:30 tonight. Mm-hmm. He played a lot of it in a tough minutes role, if there is tough minutes against the Rangers, which is probably debatable. But he is looking good. He's so smart out there on the ice with the puck. It's just such a – it's so eye-popping to watch him play the game, because he's so much – he's ahead of the game more so than any other Oilers players. Just makes nice, smart, quick moves, and then fires off a pass right on somebody's hockey stick. It has been forever since we've seen that kind of players on the Oilers blue line, since he was healthy. And I forgot how marvelous a hockey player Andrei Sekera was, honestly.
Well, last year,
how quickly it fades.
He was so bad last year that many of us lost hope that he would come back.
I did.
And you'll recall we had this conversation a couple times in the weeks pending his return, where I was holding out some hope that he would be some semblance of his former self. And I'm very happy with what I've seen to this point. I don't think he's quite the player he was, but he's a darn sight closer to it this year than he was last year, when he was basically brutal.
What's your bad thing?
Oh, my bad thing is what happened to Oscar Klefbom. And that's a bad thing on a number of levels. I mean, poor guy. They showed the replay in the arena of the slap shot that hit him right in the basically the can, right?
And, oh, was it the can? I thought it was kind of in the ribs.
And I think, judging by the huge sort of groan that went up from about 10,000 men in the stands. It's one of those sort of visceral gut reactions. Oh, that's got to hurt. And Downing went, that poor bastard. He's got hurt now the second time this year. Twice he's been hurt just by standing somewhere and getting absolutely drilled in a soft spot by a slap shot. You know, he just can't seem to be, you know, I mean, maybe he's just made out of glass. I mean, guys get hit by pucks, goodness knows, lots. But he's, I mean, that one he took off the fingers was brutal. in December, the one that put him out for 20 games. This one, hopefully, it'll only put him out for the two periods that he missed tonight. And Hitchcock was slightly, he said, we'll know more tomorrow, but we're hopeful that he won't miss any more time. But
well, we'll find out if he's as sturdy in the can as Matt Hendricks is.
Well, yeah, I remember that incident. In fact, I saw somebody posted an image of Matt Hendricks' Hall of Fame can that, remember, you had an entire post about it one time. And he actually came back to, I mean, he missed a couple shifts, but he came back to finish that game. Well, Oscar did not tonight. And that really put the heat on. I mean, when you're down to five defensemen in the first period, and then they lost Matt Benning to a headshot in the third period, early in the third period, and they were down to four after that. And so they had some, they had three guys, 2, 4, and 6, almost, they all played 23 and a half minutes, almost the same. And then Darnell Nurse, a monstrous 30 minutes, 42 seconds tonight.
And 30 of those were in regulation time. Like,
yeah, that's right. I mean,
there was only like 25 seconds in overtime.
Yeah. So, and he was involved in that, and of course helped set up the game-winning goal. So those four guys came through with pretty solid performances. But what happened to Klefbom, and also the implications, if it is something that puts him out, then that's really going to be, if you'll pardon the expression, a slap shot in the crotch to the Oilers' playoff chances.
Well, they got it. I mean, I just hope they call up Caleb Jones if he's out. And if they go with Petrovic, come on. Like, they need to – this is a team, and I wrote a post today about their undervaluing, their chronic undervaluing of puck-moving defensemen, which has continued to this year when they thought they would solve the cycling problem, you know, opposition teams coming in and cycling to the death by bringing in Manning and Petrovic, you know, like the old idea of, you know, you fight, you know, rock, paper, scissors, you go rock against rock, I guess. Well,
the defensemen are here to play defense only, yeah. Doesn't work that way anymore.
Or paper, I guess, to beat rock. But anyway, they got to bring up Caleb Jones if Klefbom's hurt. That's, I just, and play him third pairing.
If Klefbom's hurt, it doesn't matter who they bring up. They're going to be hurting bad because, you know, he's a big minute munching guy.
Well, you know, Bruce Sekera, I would have said that before Sekera's return, but if you slot Sekera into the top pairing and Jones into Sekera's spot, you might be okay.
That's what they didn't have last time Klefbom got hurt, was there. Of course, they were also missing Sekera. So they were,
and Russell. Okay, so my bad thing, Bruce, was Mikko Koskinen on the second goal against. And the Oilers at that point, or excuse me, the first goal against.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, excuse me. Come on, Koskinen. Like, the Oilers, they have that game in hand. It's 2-0, and it's a shot. And it was a odd man rush, but it hadn't developed into much. And the shot came from outside, and Koskinen just blew it. And he's Bruce. You can't have that kind of goaltending and make the playoffs. It is a total backbreaker. The Oilers were lucky; they were kind of, New York came and tied it on a much tougher play. And Koskinen, to his credit, did come back and make some big, really big saves in the third period, but he can't do that. He can't be that goalie who's letting in that kind of shot in a big game like that for the Oilers. And I just was not at all happy with that. It bugged the snot out of me.
Well, yeah, I mean, and he made some good saves. Like, in the second period, like, he faced 11 shots, and that might have been the 11th toughest shot.
Yeah, you got to have it, man. Like, what are you doing?
And that thing goes in, and you're going, just come on. The same thing happened against Vancouver last week. They were cruising along at 3-0.
Yeah.
And he had this horrible, it was actually a very similar shot, low to the stick side, and he overplayed it, and he somehow managed to. And, I mean, tonight he had to move his pad out of the way to let it in. It was not good.
Okay, what's your number?
My number is 4. And that is the number of shots on goal New York Rangers had in the 22 minutes and 24 seconds that Andrei Sekera played at even strength. And New York had 4 shots on net in 22-plus minutes. Like, that's over a period of hockey. And he was playing with a variety of partners because, of course, the injury Klefbom that moved him up the batting order, but then the injury to his regular partner, Benning, early in the third. So he played 10 minutes with Larson, 6 minutes with Benning, and 6 minutes with Russell. And combined with those three different pairings, they allowed just four shots on net, control the defensive game, and also he wound up a plus one because I managed to get a somewhat suspect goal by Matt Benning that, of course, Zecker was on the ice for that. But
good goal, man. Good goal.
I thought the call was technically probably right, but it was...
I don't think Cassian hit him.
I'm not sure, but not both guys might have got a little piece of him, but certainly the Ranger clocked the goalie the hardest. Anyway, 23 minutes, by far the most that he's played, and he responded not by buckling, but by buckling up. And
yeah, only one of those shots against Bruce was a grade A shot of the four. Only one of them. And that's a pretty good night for a defenseman playing against the best players on the opposition team, as Zecker did for most of the night. Yeah, he was just fantastic. He's, again, I was raving about him earlier. He's the Francis Pospisil of the Edmonton Oilers right now. So good for him.
His stats were by far the of the defense group, he was particularly the most impressive for just controlling the play.
I thought Larson was pretty good tonight too, and had a kind of a bounce back game where he didn't make any glaring errors. He's been making too many recently, and I thought he was really strong. So my number, Bruce, is the one D man who didn't have such a good night, was Chris Russell. Mm-hmm. I think it's five, and that's five major mistakes on grade A scoring chances against. Wow, he was just letting a lot into the slot, and that's not his custom. He also made a neutral zone turnover on the first Rangers goal, kind of pushed it up the ice, and they came firing back 4-on-2. So, no, I didn't think Chris Russell actually was at the same level as the other defensemen asked to step up their games. I thought he was actually... a bit of a turnstile tonight, and that's not usually what you see from Russell, so he's got to be better. And I think I think Zecker or Russell, fantastic pairing in 26-17, at least a good pairing, and I think we'll see that again. I mean, if Klefbom is out, well, maybe we'll see. It's hard to know what combination they use. I don't really like Nurse Larson. I don't think the puck moving's there, but then Nurse Russell, the puck moving hasn't been there either, so... But, man, I hope, obviously we're all hoping Klefbom's really just fine and good to go. But if he's not, like, bring up Caleb Jones pronto. Agree or disagree?
Well, I'm not sure who they might actually put in the lineup, whether it might be Kevin Gravel or I don't think it'll be Petrovich. But I'm kind of on board with you, but he'd have to be in the third pairing and promote.
Yes.
So
that's all. Like, just third pairing, 16 minutes a game, just give him the Zecker minutes. And he can handle those minutes. He was killing it. He was acing it when he had those same minutes. It was only when they put him in the top pairing. And, yeah, his game fell apart. But I don't know why they didn't just keep him in the third pairing. After that, I think
for Brandon Manning and Alex.
They did. They had this other idea about how to break the cycle. You're going to grind it into a pulp with these hulking, somewhat big defensemen, and that's how it's going to. It's like in today's NHL, it's antiquated thinking, and it's been killing the Oilers. I mean, the Oilers are in a race right now with Chicago, and Chicago's in that race largely because the Oilers undervalued one of the best puck-moving defensemen in the NHL today, Erik Gustafsson. They didn't offer him a contract, and it's killing the Oilers, that kind of decision-making. The guy's ninth in league scoring, ninth in NHL scoring for defensemen. And the Oilers, he's exactly what the Oilers need right now, and they just let him slip through their fingers like the bumbling.
I had him, and I just never even gave him a shot.
Anyway,
that was a killer column you wrote, and then you made some very good points. When you listed all the guys, I mean, they're not all sort of classic puck movers, but they are guys that can skate and make a play. And there was 14 friggin' guys on that. There were 14 guys.
Since 2006, 14. Yeah. It's like a guy a year. They throw away a guy.
They've just thrown it back into the pond. They know they didn't always have control over that guy, but more often than not, they just got rid of him. Or they traded him for a guy that couldn't skate, you know, Tom Gilbert for Nick Schultz.
Ouch.
Oh. Or Jeff Petrie for...
Yeah, Jeff Petrie's he's not tough enough, Pete Petrie, so let's get rid of him. Justin Schultz, we can't find a use for him. Let's get rid of him. Yeah. Anyway. Just on and on and on. And then there's the other guys, more recent ones. Like, it has an end. Like, some people are saying, why are you writing about this? It's like old stuff. And I'm saying, come on. It's happened this year. This year they brought in Manning and Petrovic. I mean, they had a specific problem they needed to solve, which is beating the cycle, and their idea was to go back to heavy hockey.
Yeah.
Fire all of those guys.
Those who can't learn from history are doomed to repeat it. It's an old saying. And if you have a case where you can basically bring it into the present and say, well, it doesn't look like they've learned from it, then, you know, it's a case worth making.
You know, McClellan didn't – they had Jordan Austerly. Mm-hmm. Wasn't a bad little player, and they let him go.
I was at the Arizona game where they lost, Oilers lost 3-2 in regulation to Arizona, a team they're now chasing, and Osterley had a goal and assist. It was just a nightmare to watch.
All right, so we got New Jersey when? Thursday? When?
Wednesday, 2 days from now.
Wednesday.
Yeah, you know, David, I get to about maybe half dozen games a year. And the last 2 years, I've seen the Oilers play six games that went to overtime. They're 6-0 in those games. Five of them, they won it in overtime, with both McDavid and Draisaitl having 2 goals and 3 assists in those 5 games. And the 6th game, which was the Sedin retirement game, they won in the shootout with both McDavid and Draisaitl scoring in the shootout. Those guys are just killers in the 3-on-3, and it's a huge weapon for Edmonton.
So was that your kind of oblique but very ingenious pitch for other people to give you free tickets to Oilers games, Bruce?
Well, I'm kind of happy with the number I get to, because the work that we do, in many ways, I prefer watching those games on TV. It's very hard to go to a game live and then come home. And
I agree. I don't.
So this is why I'm very happy you picked up the grades tonight, so that I could just relax and enjoy the game, and enjoyed the Hall of Fame room too. I got to see that for the first time, and that was fun. Found a mistake, but...
Oh, what was the mistake?
It was Wayne Gretzky's puck. They had his 136th assist puck to break the record, and they had the date of March of 1988. And at that point, he'd already broken his old record of 135 and made it 163. So the date was wrong. It might have been a 136 assist puck, but it was from 2 years previous. So I actually found a typo in the Hall of Fame room. So...
And you knew that.
I wanted to tell someone, but there was
no. You just did. All right. Thanks for talking tonight, Bruce.
I just did. Yeah. Thanks. Thanks for listening, everyone. On to Edmonton to beat New Jersey on Wednesday, and still fighting chance. You know, 5 back, and it's not over.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.